Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Verrill, and today we're talking with Vicki Oliver, a leading career development expert and multi-best-selling author of 5 books, including 301 Smart Answers to Tough Interview Questions, 301 Smart Answers to Tough Business Etiquette Questions, and Bad Bosses, Crazy Coworkers, and Other Office Idiots. And we're talking about why women have left the workplace and ways in which employers can attract women back to the workplace. Welcome, Vicki, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I just love this topic and I'm really appreciative to be here.
Well, I certainly think it's something that our listeners are going to be really excited to dig into. But before we dig into that subject, I always like to make sure I'm clear with our listeners about why did I invite you to be a guest on the show about this topic? Give our listeners a little bit of background about you and kind of how you came into this role of providing guidance to employers.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, first of all, I used to be in the advertising business and I was a cub copywriter and I grew actually into a creative director. And first of all, advertising at the time was like a revolving door. So I worked at like millions of different places, right? Each time, like sort of climbing up the ladder of rung, you know? And so anyway, I eventually got into a position where I was hiring people and people would roll into the ad agency, you know, and they had no idea like who our clients were. They had no idea who I was or anything about us, you know, and they like roll in 10 minutes late, you know, hey, how are you? And just be so general. And literally about 1,000 times, I thought to myself, buddy, you are blowing this interview. Okay, I am going to write about this, I swear. You know, and so really that's actually what happened. You know, I had experience pounding the pavement myself, and I had experience like being on the other side hiring people. And with that experience, I decided to write my impressions. And that became 301 Smart Answers to Tough Interview Questions. That's how I started. And then once in that book, I added a little thing at the end, a note that said, well, here are 301 questions that I answered, but maybe I didn't answer your question. So if you have another one, here's my email address and write to me. So from that, I got all this research from all around the country about people's dilemmas with their job searches and their problems and their bosses and everything. And that led to the other books.
I love it. And I also love kind of the fact that you've been on both sides of the, I don't want to say problem, but I mean, that's one of the reasons we're talking about it is because, you know, it's hard to get right and you've seen it from both sides and then have that experience from both sides to then be able to provide both employees and employers with guidance about what this looks like, how it feels to be on the other side of the seat or the other side of the desk as we move through kind of all of this. You also do speaking engagements. Tell me a little bit about some of the speaking engagements that you do and what that looks like.
Right. So, you know, a college, maybe a grad school program or a company, like people will reach out to me and then I will develop a talk based on what that particular person wants, you know. So I've spoken to college students. I have spoken to people in transition, like women who have been out of the workforce for, you know, 10, 15 years, let's say, raising their children. I have talked to retirees who want to get back in, you know. And so I've tried to, you know, customize my thoughts, my help for the particular audience. And I've spoken a lot at a lot of different venues. And it's really fun for me. And I find it super engaging to hear from real people, like what their issues are, and to try to brainstorm with them. You know, I've also done resume consultations and things like that, just on all sides of sort of the job hunting, job hiring continuum. I've talked at HR conferences, et cetera. And it's really, 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 I find I learn more. It's for me, I learn more from them even than they learn from me, because it's just great getting out there and meeting people.
No, and I think that all this background is so helpful for our listeners to understand it. And you mentioned kind of different stages in a person's career, or different stages in a life cycle in which people are re-entering the workforce. And right now, I mean, we're seeing a lot of people who are either staying in the workforce longer, or we're seeing this interesting trend of people who retire maybe for a year, maybe less than, and then return to the workforce again because retirement isn't either what they expected or they're just not ready to stop working. The demographic that I want to focus today on, though, is women kind of just more generally. And I think it's important for us to set the stage initially as to why do we need to attract women back to the work environment, or more specifically, where did they go? So talk to me a little bit about kind of where did they go? Is this just something that's been happening, you know, more generally, or did something kind of bring us to this point in time?
Right. Great, great, great questions. So first of all, during the pandemic, which really lasted, I would say, 4 years, you know, we saw a trend during the pandemic that was the Great Resignation. And a lot of workers, especially women, left their jobs in huge numbers. Okay, now the reasons are many, but some of them included like frustration over the pandemic protocols, problems getting childcare, you know, overseeing like their children's remote learning, and frankly, just dissatisfaction with the mission of the companies where they worked. You know, I think what happened was the pandemic came upon all of us, and it was a giant time of reflection. And people, workers everywhere, employees everywhere reflected, and lots of them decided to quit. That's what happened. You know, so as a result of that, you know, and also just because it's hard to balance like raising a child, maybe you're overseeing, you know, elder care as well. Like you could be sandwiched in between and you have a lot of responsibilities. Women have more responsibilities on the caregiving side than men do still today. And it can just be, you know, difficult. And then in addition, it was a time of reflection, you know, instead of just being at the office like worker bees, you know, we were home, we had to be home. And it just gave us a chance to think, oh, how happy am I in this job? You know, am I being paid enough in this job? You know, and so women left. And that was like a huge, you know, problem. And I believe that women should be contributing, you know, our talents to the workforce. So anyway, so that's what led to it. Okay.
So, and you mentioned kind of generally, you know, individuals who are either sandwiched with both parental caretaking or elder caretaking responsibilities, as well as potential younger or childcare responsibilities. I mean, did we see women leaving the workforce at a higher rate than other demographics more generally during the last 4 years? And yes, we'll say kind of 2020 to now.
Yeah. I mean, the quit rate for women exceeded men 4.1% compared to 3.4%. Obviously, it depends on the industry, like a particular industry might have like more women leaving, you know, than men. Industry by industry, it might vary a little bit. But yes, women left the workforce. And of course, you know, women have been unfortunately historically underpaid compared to men also. So it was also a chance to look at like, oh, you know, I'm being underpaid and I'm overworked and underpaid, you know? Not a great satisfaction ratio with that.
No, absolutely not. I don't think anyone's going to argue with that without regard to their gender, national origin, race, any of those things. You know, the goal truly is equal pay for all without regard to any of those statuses. For those of you who may just be joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and I'm your host, Tani Alvarez. And today our guest is Vicki Oliver, a leading career development expert and multi-best-selling author of 5 books, including 301 Smart Answers to Tough Interview Questions, 301 Smart Answers to Tough Business Etiquette Questions, and Bad Bosses, Crazy Coworkers, and Other Office Idiots. And today we're talking about why women have left the workplace and ways in which employers can attract women back. So, Vicki, we've set the stage so we know why women have left it and understand that the data shows that they have left at a higher rate than male colleagues. Let's jump into kind of ways in which we can bring them back. And I want to start with the first, you know, and in no particular order, I don't mean you have to say, you know, the most important one first, just kind of we'll talk about it at random. But what's the first way in which employers can attract women back to the workplace?
I would say that if employers can be flexible about what both their expectations and the timelines of when they expect the projects to be fulfilled, you know? So during the pandemic, when people had to work from home, we all increased our learning curve about technology. We learned to Zoom, you know? We learned how to do lots of stuff that we had never really had to do before on a consistent basis. And so during that period of time, workers prove that they can be just as productive working from home as they can be in the office if their employers can be flexible about when those projects happen, right? So that women can juggle like caring for their children, caring for their elders, you know, coping with their own health issues and doing their work. And during that period of time, productivity actually went up, not down. All right. So that I think helps to know, like for employers out there, if you can be flexible, if you can trust your people to do their work on their own time and complete their tasks, you're going to attract more women to you and people will love working for you. You know, it's like a win-win.
No, it's really interesting because I think it's not just women who are seeking this flexibility. I think our whole workforce is seeking this flexibility. And if for our listeners who may join us each week or who subscribe to the podcast, you'll recall a recent episode where we discussed about the importance of flexibility more generally as it relates to individuals who are living in or around the poverty level and the importance of flexibility to assist in assisting people to get out of in-work poverty. So it's interesting because we see this concept of flexibility as being important both to assist people economically more generally, if they can take a couple hours off to go to a doctor's appointment or to take care of something and then, you know, provide the work at another time, or, you know, flexibility about timeliness based off of different competing interests that the employee may have, whether or not it's all work related, whether or not some of it's personal. And then we see those flexibility concepts a lot when we talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, about understanding that different individuals kind of have different both learning styles as well as ways in which we need to be more fluid or organic, I think, in how we are reviewing materials and how individuals interrelate with our culture more generally. I'm sure, Vicki, we have some people who are listening and they're like, well, wait a second, are you telling me that I should just not have the same expectations for women that I have for men? Tani, isn't that illegal? What are your thoughts to people who may be thinking that?
Okay, so first of all, no, I would say you should have the same expectations for your female employees as your male employees, absolutely, positively. You know, it's just knowing that the work is going to get done. You know, it's going to get done, and you need to trust the person to get their work done. like gone is the culture where you can look over their shoulders. Because, you know, even today, it's a hybrid situation. Like many places like went to all remote and they've migrated now to hybrid. And so maybe people will be in their office like 2 days a week, you know, and you can see what they're kind of up to 2 days a week, but the other 3 days they're at home. So you just have to sort of like let the rope go, you know, let it loosen. But I also just want to make one other point about the flexibility, which is that I also think it's great for employers because now they can maybe hire people who don't live in the area, you know, who aren't living three blocks away. And I think that that expands, you know, the knowledge base. You can hire people like from around the country if you can just be flexible about the time, right? Because if you hire somebody on the West Coast and you're living on the East Coast, you're working on the East Coast, you know, there's a huge time difference there, 3 hours. But you can figure it out, you know, you can, and you can hire people internationally to help you too. If you can just figure out the timelines and when things are due and have like strict firm deadlines that you insist on and hopefully some in-person gatherings where people can brainstorm and get to know the people that they're working with that are on their teams.
This is really important and a really good starting point for this discussion more generally, Vicky. Thank you for that. We're at that point, however, where we're going to need to take a short break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Car is a wreck and you don't know where to go.
Take it to Moody's.
You wanna get on with your life, get on with the show.
Take it to Moody's.
Good people you can trust and it won't be a fuss.
Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
M-O-O-D-Y. Your kid was talking on the cell phone, drove right through your own home. Sitting in the parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot. Driving through the green light, suddenly your side swipe. Put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's. Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Barrel-Law.com. I'm your host, Tanya Alvarez, and today we're talking with Vicky Oliver, a leading career development expert and multi-best-selling author of 5 books, including 301 Smart Answers to Tough Interview Questions, 301 Smart Answers to Tough Business Etiquette Questions, Bad Bosses, Crazy Coworkers, and Other Office Idiots. And we're talking today about both why women have left the workplace and ways in which employees can attract women back to the workplace. In our last segment, we talked, Vicky, about why women left the workforce and the fact that they actually did leave the workforce at a higher rate than men did in kind of the past 4 years, 2020 to where we are now. And we were able to touch on the first element of bringing people and bringing women back into the workplace, with that being flexibility. Let's turn to what the second step that employers can take to really attract women back to work.
Okay, I feel that employers should put women on their leadership teams. When women candidates see women in positions of leadership at companies, it makes a powerful statement. It says there's opportunity for them to grow at your company in a way that no amount of verbiage can kind of replace putting women in leadership positions. And, you know, when companies are saying, oh, we're going to be more equitable, we're going to be more inclusive, all those words, they sound great, but really putting women on the top as leaders is going to help bring in more women to you. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's interesting because there is so much research out there about the fact that in order for DE&I programs to work, you know, people have to see a strategy or a staircase or a ladder in which somebody is higher than them who looks like them. Or, and when I say looks like them, it might not have to be only in physical appearance, but demographically or similarly educated or those type of things. Is there a place for me more generally in the business, or am I going to be a trailblazer? And that's with the understanding that, this, you know, certain candidates may be fine, absolutely fine with being a trailblazer in that perspective. But when we look at inclusivity concepts more generally, we see that, you know, having people in leadership who look similar to you is helpful for maintaining that relationship kind of more generally. We know that we can't just take into account people's gender or take into account race, ethnicity, those things in making our promotion decisions. But thoughts on, is it really kind of the difference and diversity of thought leadership? Is that a good way for us to focus in on bringing more women into leadership?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's also mentorship too. I mean, it's so much probably easier for a woman coming into a company to look to a woman, another woman on the leadership team, and be able to go to that person and ask them questions, you know, and get a little bit of guidance. And I just want to say also, like, especially now, because with the hybrid model, with us not being physically in the office as much, I think it's helpful to have, like, people, role models that the person can look up to, but also role models that the person can reach out to. You know, it just makes it a more inclusive, yes, more inclusive, more diverse company, but also I think it also makes for happier employees, you know, and part of retaining employees is making sure that they're happy, you know, giving them the opportunities. So yes, I'm sure lots of women would love to be trailblazers, you know, in sort of typically male environments. Yes. But I think in terms of, you know, being attractive to women, getting that thought that women can bring, like a particular style of leadership, I think if you put women in leadership positions, you're going to attract more. It's just the way it is. Like attracts like.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So let's jump to the third. What's the third element or the third step that employers can take to attract women back to work?
Right. So I think before we were talking about pay discrepancy, and this is a big bugaboo for me, you know, because the pay discrepancy has not gone up very much in the last 20 years. You know, I think it used to be that women were earning like 72 cents for the dollar that men were, and now they are earning 78 cents for the dollar that men are. It's like gone up a big 6 cents in like 20 years, you know? And think about the inflation rate, like, you know, which means like it's just, you know, it's just terrible. You know, Black women unfortunately earn even less than that than men, and Latinx women earn even less than what white men earn. So, you know, I would say, first of all, it's much easier now for workers to find out what they should be paid. I mean, there's a lot of information out there on the internet and in other places. It's just more transparent in general. So gone are the days where, you know, employers can sort of hide what people are earning. It's easy for somebody to find out what the median salary range is, you know, for a particular job. And once they're working there, it's very easy for somebody to say, hey, why is this guy making more than me? You know, we're doing the same job. Like, I'm working just as hard as that guy, you know, I should be paid the same. So I would say, please, you know, even out the pay scale so that women earn what men earn.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Well, not just interesting, but I 100% agree with kind of everything you're saying, Vicki. And as we see more and more states passing more pay transparency statutes, it's going to become even more imperative for employers to get ahead of this. You know, we've gone decades and decades where we've had this disparity where no one has really dug into the data at the depth in which, you know, we need to have that data dug into, with the understanding that, you know, both under the Federal Equal Pay Act and then under different state laws, that there are, you know, in some instances, explanations as to why there are differentials in pay. But in many situations, you know, we have data that suggests that men are more likely to negotiate their salary upon initial offer, and women are less likely to do so. And if, you know, two people start with one person having negotiated a higher salary when they come in, and both individuals receive a 4% raise every year, 4% of a higher number is just going to continue to expand kind of that gap between those two employees. And if you're not an employer who's paying close attention to that data, you're going to find yourself in a host of trouble. So I really, really appreciate, you know, that as one of the elements here, Vicki, because I 100% agree.
You know, I think that the point you made about men negotiating salaries like better maybe than women, I think that's very interesting. And I think that that might go to a whole range of behaviors, you know, at the office, where men are possibly better at negotiating, you know, all kinds of things, you know, better offices, titles, etc. It might go, you know, to something, but it still is, I feel, not correct to pay women a lot less for the same job and the same hours that they are putting in as men are.
Absolutely. Let's jump to that element number four. What's the fourth thing that employers can really be focusing in on to try to attract women back into the workforce after having left?
All right. So this one is a bit counterintuitive, I think, given how what we've been talking about today. But I think that hiring blind is the way to go, which means to be gender blind when recruiting and hiring, and masking the gender information for job candidates in the initial selection process. Because a lot of times there's coded language in a job ad, you know, we're looking for a real rainmaker, you know, like an aggressive can-do person, you know. I've also seen, you know, aggressive, very young, you know, person. These things are coded for like male, you know, young, da, da, da. And that is actually discouraging to women to read that kind of language, where, you know, you just imagine, you know, lots of guys, you know, coming in and like, boom, we're going to win this account or whatever it is. So actually, to be gender blind in the initial process and to scan those job solicitations that you're making to make sure that the language is something that's attractive to women, you know, and we'll talk about this a little bit later. But, you know, I would say growth, you know, things where somebody can grow and learn is attractive to women, especially if you think about it, if women have been out of the workforce for a while, you know, they're not going to be coming in like, oh, I'm just going to grab, you know, I'm not a he-man. They're going to have to learn on the job. So that would be the next thing, hiring blind.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting because I think that step, I also agree, is really important and also requires employers to really give thought to the job itself. What are the qualifications that are necessary for the job. And with that understanding that, you know, oftentimes statistically, the research shows that men are more likely to apply for jobs in which they're underqualified for, and that women kind of won't apply for a job if they're underqualified. So taking that data and really looking at it and saying, what is necessary? Is a degree necessary? Is 5 years of experience necessary? Or is it something that would be wonderful, you know, to have, but maybe not a necessity?
The statistic is like super interesting. I've also seen that, for example, if a job listing lists like, you know, 20 qualifications, right? A woman will like actually, most women will like actually go through each one and say, well, do I have this? Do I have that degree? Do I have like 5.5 years of experience like doing this and blah, blah, blah. And whereas men will like just kind of sort of skim it and then just go for it anyway, you know, so you're right. Like, does somebody really need 5 years of experience in the exact same job to do the job? Or can somebody enterprise and come in and learn it, you know, quickly enough? So yeah, great point.
So let's jump into that fifth element before we take a break. So the fifth element that employers can do to attract women back to work.
Right. So I would say the fifth element is to encourage your workers to keep learning by offering them development opportunities. I would say, you know, we all need to keep learning in this high tech environment, this 24/7, you know, where AI is like sweeping in, right, and taking jobs away. We all have to learn and learn and learn and learn. So consider, you know, paying for degrees, encouraging your workers to get new certifications so that they can keep up with the speed of change, which is so fast, and just, you know, reward them for doing it. And so I would say, like, give them the opportunities, tell them why they need to learn, and just keep pushing them to get further and further and further along. Because also, that is also going to increase their loyalty to you.
Yeah, no, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because that's where my mind was going as you were saying kind of the importance of education is it ties in really nicely with your first element about flexibility, which really has a foundation of trust and respect. And by providing educational benefits or other training opportunities, I feel like we have that similar foundation of trust and respect, and that by providing that to employees, that in many more situations, they're more likely to then, you know, stay with you long term, and for that to increase both inclusion within the organization and then longevity, which we both know is so important to decrease those onboarding costs and the other issues that oftentimes follow high turnover positions.
Yeah, I would also just add, you know, that when you're advertising the listing, you know, you should advertise that you are pro learning, that you have, you know, you encourage your employees to keep learning. I think that will be very attractive to women.
No, very good point. Because, you know, will a person apply if they don't realize that that's something that's important to the employer or focus of the benefit package? We're at that time again where we need to take another quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored to thank our sponsors for their support and contributions to this program. We thank the law firms of Verrill, Jackson Lewis, and Sheehan Finney, along with our partners, Paper Trails and Strategic HR. Want to be the next sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say HR Power Hour sponsor.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetty.
And I'm Pete McVetty from McVetty's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Witness, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel Vermont Castings or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay. There's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. And we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetty's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Verrill, and today we're talking with Vicki Oliver, a leading career development expert and multi-selling best author. We've been spending the day talking about why women have left the workplace and then ways in which employers can attract women back into the workplace. And we're focusing in on 8 specific things employers can do to really attract women back into the workforce. And we've talked about things such as flexibility and equal pay, having women in leadership, hiring blind, and we just finished talking about training and education and how important that is more generally for people both to feel as though, you know, they're being invested in, but also to keep skills sharp. That leads us, Vicki, to our sixth element. What is the sixth thing, and in no particular order, that employers can be doing to help attract women back to work?
Well, I really like the idea of employers having mentoring programs and really trying to think about who they can pair with somebody else, you know, so that when somebody starts, when the onboarding starts, they're paired with somebody in a position of power who will, you know, A, not feel competitive with them, B, care about them, you know, C, advocate for them, help them negotiate bumps along the road, and, you know, pave the way for their fulfillment. So, you know, mentorships have a lot of places disappeared, and it's time to bring them back.
No, I think that you make so many good points as it relates to the importance of those relationships. And even more so, you know, in my mind, the goal is that through a mentorship program that you start seeing sponsorship. And you, when we use that term sponsorship, I'm not talking about, you know, taking out a billboard at the next Red Sox game, but more generally kind of looking at the fact that a sponsor is going to be somebody who is going to take that employee and talk about them in amazing ways, kind of when that individual is not there, and really explain to other people the value of this person when that person's not sitting in the room. And I think we see, more and more success from this standpoint. I mean, there are very few CEOs and leaders who you talk to or who you hear from who, when you're asked, hey, did you have someone? Was there a mentor? Was there a sponsor? Was there a person who really helped to mold you to be where you're at? Very rarely do we hear someone say like, nope, 100% self-made. Nobody helped me for not one moment, not one second. But instead we hear from a variety of people, different people in their lives who have both provided mentorship, support, sponsorship. And I agree with you that making sure, especially for someone who's been out of the workforce for a period of time, I think that having someone to help guide through all of the ins and outs of the workplace is just so very important.
I always think it can be done. But if for whatever reason it can't be done, then I would say the next best thing is to encourage people on your teams to reach out to their professional networks, reach out to women's chambers of commerce, reach out to people outside the company to try to get the mentoring help. I mean, I know for myself, I'm an entrepreneur, but I know for myself, like I reach out to people from various networks that I've encountered along the way, including like ad agencies where I've worked, but other places too, because all you really need, I mean, as a worker, that is, all you really need is like a team of people who care about you and who care about your advancement, and who aren't going to block you and will help you. And so if you are an employer and you can't put together a mentorship program that works, I would encourage people to go to those events, the chambers of commerce events, those type of events where they can start building their own networks of people to that they can reach out to.
Absolutely. A really good point that it doesn't have to be internal there. The seventh element, what's the seventh thing that employers can do to bring women back into the workforce?
So I would say the seventh element is to subsidize daycare. And this might be tough, but I still think it's important. If you can put an on-site daycare, if you can establish that, I think that would be great. Or if you can contract with a childcare center nearby, I think that would be great. But the idea is to try to take off some of the burden from women of arranging and affording their own daycare. I think, again, this all go to, like, this is also, I think, a blueprint for a loyalty program here that we're talking about. Because I think if you do all these things for the women who work for you, they will love you and they will stay. Okay. And so you're going to save so much money on all that hiring. People will stay longer. Loyalty is critical.
No, it's interesting. And I think we see a lot of other nations. I mean, if you're listening to us from outside the United States, you may be thinking to yourself, what are you even talking about? Don't all employers kind of assist or provide some type of assistance there? I think we see in other countries a focus on this at a significantly higher rate than how much support we see kind of within the United States, unfortunately. If we look at the eighth element, our final element, what would be that eighth element that you think would really help in bringing women back to work after this kind of period of time where many have taken a break from the work? And I say break from the workforce, and that's not to indicate that any time spent at home caring for parents or caring for children hasn't been work, but kind of working outside of the home more generally.
I'd say the eighth element is to increase paid family leave. Today women are still bearing the brunt of like the family emergencies. And I don't think that they should be unfairly penalized for having to care for family members during an emergency. So if you extend paid family leave to all employees, men can share the responsibilities of providing the care needed too. And I think that will make a huge statement. And again, make people even more loyal, your workers even more loyal to you than they already are.
And it's interesting because I don't know if I've seen any data or if data has been pulled, especially in the states that have recently instituted paid family leave programs, whether or not New Jersey, New York, Massachusetts, California, kind of the states that have government run paid leave programs, and whether or not, if we compare statistically where they were at as it relates to women in the workforce or women leaving the workforce prior to the institution of those paid leave programs. And now I can imagine that even if statistically we didn't see a difference, that the lack of fear, anxiety, and other concerns that people experience at work has decreased significantly, because they do know that that program is available to provide them with flexibility that they may need in order to take leave to have a child, or if they have a child or a parent or a family member who does have a serious medical condition, that they're going to have the flexibility. Here we are using all, some of those Absolutely. Same words are coming up to provide care and support.
Right. But also, paternity leave, not just maternity leave, it just all goes toward supporting the people who support you.
No, absolutely. All really important and really good areas that we need to focus on as we consider this, both to bring women back into the workplace and I think also to continue to attract and maintain our workforce more generally. So we're going to take another quick break. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HRPowerHour.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
Today, I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying, totally, just shorter.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today I've been talking with Vicki Oliver, a leading career development expert and multi-best-selling author. We've been discussing ways in which women can be attracted back into the workplace. We discussed the fact that after COVID, we saw a significant increase in the number of women who had left the workplace. And we've spent the episode talking about eight ways that employers can attract women back into the workplace. A lot of you who have been listening to the whole show are like, wait a second, Tawny, why are you still talking when Vicki's given us her 8 points? You're absolutely right. She's given us all 8 points. But I have another question that I want to pick Vicki's brain about. And that's, as we look to the future, Vicki, trends that we're seeing in the workplace, any trends that are high on your radar right now? And what are your thoughts generally about it?
Great question. Thank you for asking. I would say I have found learned of a trend where workers who know that they're going to be fired have started videotaping the whole firing process and then taking the video and posting it on social media like TikTok, right? And I just wanted to say that, you know, these videos get thousands of views. And so I would say, if you're a worker out there and you're considering such a thing, I still think it's a really bad idea because it actually positions you as like a problem rather than a person that solves problems. Like here you are taping, you know, a very terrible moment. I think it positions you as being a troublemaker in a way. You're kind of like, it's sort of revenge-y to go out there and then, you know, taping the person that's probably not wanting to get rid of you but has to, you know, and then it puts that person's name out there also on the internet. And I think the real problem with doing it is that nothing goes away. You know, once it's out there, it's out there. So if you go and, you know, you post a video of yourself being canned, then later you're trying to get another job. Maybe it's three jobs down the line, right? But that video of you is still there. And HR managers will find it. They will not hire you, I don't think, because you will have shown that you're a problem and not a person. Do you really want to be famous for being a problem? No, no, you don't. You want to solve problems. So anybody thinking about it, I'd say, please don't do it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a really good point, Vicki. And there's that the part of me, you know, the lawyer side of my brain that's both saying, well, first, like, is it even legal in your state to covertly, you know, be recording someone? For those of you who may be considering this path and are not taking to heart all the things that Vicki said, you know, is it even legal in your state? And then if it is legal, you're right, Vicki. I mean, the things that live online never die. And the fact that, you know, in my experience, when people are posting these things online or anything such as that, that's open to the public more generally, is this goal to go viral and to be on Good Morning America or to otherwise, you know, start becoming a quote unquote influencer. And I question one's influencer status based off of, hey, watch me get terminated from this job. So really good point, Vicki, and a trend that I hope we don't see continue to expand more generally. But if we do, something that we definitely want to, you know, keep at top of mind, both as employers as to how we're communicating with employees at the time of termination, but also understanding, you know, the lasting effect that can have on employees as they attempt to search for jobs in the future. So thank you so much for that. For our listeners who may be interested in getting in touch with you more generally or finding out more about the books that you've written, what's a good way for them to connect with you?
Thank you. Well, the books are available on Amazon and other places where books are sold. And my website is Vicki with a Y, V-I-C-K-Y, Oliver.com. And there's a lot of information on the website about job hunting. There are a lot of articles there, information for you, but that's how you can reach me.
Great. Thank you so much, Vicki. I appreciate our conversation. And thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. Loved talking about all of this important stuff.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.